Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick at therickssmithshow.com. So, Trump is in Houston tonight. He's out to save Lion Ted. How bad do you have to be addicted to power when you'll kiss the behind of someone who treated you as poorly as Trump treated Ted and his wife during the campaign? How bad does this have to feel for Ted that he's got to pander to Trump to attempt to get reelected? I'm hoping Beto kicks his behind and sends Lion Ted back to wherever. Evidently, the anointed one gonna bring on the end times, according to his father. Get on with that. Anyway, from Houston, our good friend Propane Jane. We'll find out if she went to the rally. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So did you make it? Did you get to the Trump rally? Were you one of those people last night, you know, camping out all night long, you know, to get the first one in the door? Was that you?
Absolutely not.
Come on.
Absolutely not. No, there's no way. They couldn't pay me.
They could pay me. It would be a lot.
No, I don't think they could pay me.
Did you any of your friends, neighbors, any folks in line there?
I don't associate with any. I mean, literally, I don't associate with any Trump people at all this right. point in my life, thankfully.
So he's in town, and I'm waiting for the next little tidbit to come out of there. The last one from Montana caught my attention because he really loves people who can body slam reporters.
He's ridiculous. But even beyond that, have you seen the Toughest Texas Come On Ted ad?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So there's an ad, and I'll tweet it to you later. But essentially, you know, there's an older white man, and he's just having this conversation with himself, basically, about Ted Cruz and the idea that, you know, Ted Cruz is tough as Texas, quote unquote. And then he just rattles off, you know, like, hey, you let this guy talk about your wife. You let this guy implicate your dad in the JFK assassination. And if you were tough as Texas, you wouldn't be kissing this guy's you know what.
Okay, see that immediately I'm as you're starting this, I'm going, wait a second, that doesn't seem a lot to be. Yeah, that's where I would go.
And it's a brilliant ad. It's my favorite ad of this campaign season. And I think it really encapsulates, I mean, because you have to think back to the, you know, take yourself back to the GOP primary in 2016.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he tortured poor Ted.
And this is Ted's home state.
Yep.
So in that primary, you know, after Rick Perry was gone and Ted Cruz was still hanging out there, there were a lot of Texas Republicans that were siding with Ted Cruz instead of Donald Trump at that point, and were never Trumpers in that way. I mean, if you can recall when Ted gave his, you know, very elaborate, effusive speech about voting your conscience, and everybody, I think, on the Texas Republican side understood that to mean, hey, this guy Trump treated me and my family and all of my voters like crap during yep. this whole process.
No, look, I've
they
always
remember
been,
that.
Yeah, I've always been of the mindset, say what you want about me, but you don't talk about my mother, you don't talk about my wife, and you don't talk about my kids. Say what you want about me, but leave them out of it. And the second you do, them's fighting words.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, you know, he really is gambling here. I mean, I think that, you know, the expectation is that this is a red state and this is, you know, in the pocket for Ted Cruz and the GOP, and that these voters who, you know, way back when had a choice and they actually chose Ted Cruz rather than Donald Trump, and that somehow all of those people are going to be able to say that's water under the bridge and appreciate how Ted Cruz is basically, you know, has no dignity in his relationship with this man.
Yeah, well, they're hoping the amnesic in the water helps.
You know, I think they are, and I think that they're desperate because they see the enthusiasm for Beto, particularly in, and I've been tweeting about this all weekend, particularly in the suburbs of Texas, when I'm talking about the enthusiasm for Beto O'Rourke around here, when we're talking about as Texans this being something that we haven't seen before in recent times, what we are talking about is the level of enthusiasm from your average white voter that typically just reflexively votes Republican. The energy that they have for Beto O'Rourke, despite the fact that he's a Democrat, you know, he's sort of nebulous in that sense that people who don't even identify with a party, who are independents, are really latching on to him. And I think that's something that has Ted Cruz running scared, actually, which is why he's rolling the dice on bringing somebody as toxic as Donald Trump to the state to campaign for him, you know, as his closing argument.
Yeah, I mean, that's a move of desperation if you ever saw one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He's hoping that he can just pull out as many deplorable people as he can. And you know, like all of this other, you know, this caravan mess isn't going on and this situation with Saudi Arabia and all of the things that are in the news right now, and you bring him here and you're going up against Beto O'Rourke, who seems extremely reasonable.
No, he does. And you know,
antithesis of Ted Cruz.
No, and every clip that I've seen him, his arguments are measured. You know, he's very assured. He's confident. He's got, you know, he's got some swagger about him, but not arrogance.
Yeah.
I wish more Democrats were like him.
Absolutely. I mean, if we could, you know, if he could just be the prototype, right, for a lot of these districts that are sort of, you know, purple around the country and a lot of these states that really could go either way based on just having a really solid candidate that appeals to people across the board, like Barack Obama in a lot of ways. And people make that comparison between O'Rourke and Obama, you know, in many ways, I think. And it's very relevant because I do think that he has the ability to bring people in that haven't necessarily voted in forever or at all, but then also to maybe get some crossover voters that we really need to make the difference in a state like Texas.
No, you're absolutely doing. It would be a huge momentum builder into 2020 to see Texas, you know, elect a Democratic senator for the first time in, you know, forever now.
Yeah, and I think even, you know, if you sort of looked just across the board at however the wins and losses pan out, you know, I think even in a situation where the GOP, if they were to fare better than, you know, everybody, you know, at least people on our side hope they, you know, don't fare very well. But if they don't fare too bad there, but then they actually were to lose that Senate seat to you know, the Democrats in Texas, I think that would really be demoralizing for them, even if they actually did do quite well in other places.
Yeah, because I can't remember the last...
I can't either.
The last Democrat to come out, you know, would it have been... Geez, I can't even remember. I mean, it's been at least two decades.
It's been more than that.
Okay.
We'll have to look this up.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I know Andrew John. I know LBJ.
Right.
I can go back to him.
I really think that's as far as we... I mean, I think we have to go back that far. And so, again, you know, when... And, you know, people are... You know, I think we get into this rut of...
Okay, I was right. Lloyd Benson. Lloyd Benson was the last Senator.
Yes, there you go. Sorry, Lloyd. We forgot you.
You know, a lot of people did, you know, especially with that whole... whatever that was. That vice presidential thing that, you know, didn't... Didn't really... I don't think anybody wants to remember.
No, we don't. But I think that there's this aura of inevitability with the Texas GOP where, you know, it has made voters very apathetic in a lot of ways, where they just sort of feel like nobody's going to, you know, be able to defeat this, you know, monopoly they have over everything. But I really do think that even with Wendy Davis and, you know, the setbacks that she encountered, I think that she was a very similar candidate in the sense that she energized people who weren't really active and engaged in the process. And we have to find ways to do that up and down the ticket to take the state back.
Yeah, no. And I was wrong about LBJ. He was in the House. don't know why I said that. Stupid. It was the first Republican. It was the first Democratic, you know, representative that I could think of. I'm going, you know, Jack, you know, LBJ was a Democrat from Texas. That's how far my mind had to go back to remember anyone who was a Democrat from Texas.
Well, and I'm thinking about, yeah, and having a national profile, you know, in becoming president, because it just seems so unprecedented that you would have something like that coming out of the state of Texas on the Democratic side. I mean, clearly we're all accustomed to George W. Bush and that whole caricature of the Texas GOP, which in a lot of ways I think is still an accurate representation of where the Texas GOP stands. And so I do think that, again, this race is going to be very interesting, because I think that, yes, there are tons of Republicans here, but they come in a lot of different shades. And I really wonder if, you know, Trump and Ted Cruz, them being kind of so, you know, they're so radical and to the extreme on the right that I think that Beto can actually peel some of those voters off and get them over to the Democratic side, because they're still somewhat reasonable.
Yeah, I hope. because I'm looking at all the money they're spending on this race, and wow, this guy could just raise money to solve our national debt problems.
Yeah, but I mean, that just goes to show, again, I think the influence that Texas has as a state in the whole Congress, whether it be on the Senate side or on the House side. And so the GOP really is going to invest as much as they can into this state, which is also why I think when we look ahead to 2020, and this is something that I always harp about, the Democrats actually have to take states like Texas seriously. And really all of the red states, particularly in the South, where we're very ethnically diverse, and you have a lot of voters that would vote for the Democratic Party, but the national infrastructure is not really sharing with us. It's just sort of leaving us down here and going, well, you know, that's not really feasible. Let's just, you know, feed that to the Republican Party.
Yep. No, and look, Labor's done the exact same thing.
Work.
No, Labor did the exact same thing, you know, and they did the same dumb things that the Democrats have done. They've left all those people behind.
Yeah, and you know, and unfortunately, where this really hits us very hard is when you talk about voter suppression, and you talk about the fact that, you know, for instance, 55% of the African Americans in this country live in the southern United States. And so this is where the majority of the members that belong to the Democratic Party base are voting. But then we're not dedicating resources when we know that voter suppression is targeted at these voters in particular. So what we see happening in Georgia with Brian Kemp, this very egregious disenfranchisement that's happening that we knew was going to happen, right? We knew when the Supreme Court started dismantling the Voting Rights Act in 2013, that the southern states in particular were going to be the ones that got out in front of it and really went there. And they were given an inch and they took a mile. And a lot of that, I think, happens because, again, the national Democratic Party structure kind of just leaves us to really fend for ourselves, and we don't have the resources to fight back what we're really fighting, you know, with the Republican Party down here.
Yeah, no, and I've heard that story. And look, I live in a place much like the South. We're in the Alabama section of Pennsylvania, which is right dead smack in the middle. You know, I'm sure you've heard the joke about Pennsylvania. You've got Philadelphia on one end, Pittsburgh on the other, and then Alabama right in the middle.
I believe it.
There were more Hillary for prison signs in our neighborhood than there were Hillary for president signs. In fact, I think there are almost as many Confederate flags flying as there are American flags on some days.
It's terrible.
It is. It's terrible. I mean, yeah. There's still, you know, when I first moved here, it was like, you know, you're still fighting the Civil War, really? In fact, one of the first people I met, he explained to me that he's a Civil War enactor, and that you know, his whole dissertation was about how they're going to refight the Civil War and win this time. And I was like, okay, good to know. Don't call again. Thanks.
But that's the mindset that they are actually carrying with them into the voting booth.
Oh, no, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
No, there's no question about that. And I love the people who fly the Confederate flag who tell me, well, it's just our heritage. It's not about hate.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a heritage of hatred.
well, there is that, but you know, all right.
I mean, this is why things, you know, people say history repeats itself. Well, no, it's actually people are actively repeating, you know, events from history. And so, you know, yes, it's not on the same level as the Civil War in terms of, you know, people haven't yet took up arms on a mass scale. But when you look at Charlottesville and these rallies and the Nazis and the KKK and all of these people that have come out of the woodwork in response to Trump, and feeling very free to do that, and all of the things that they're talking about in terms of diversity is genocide, and there's these hordes of immigrants coming across the border, and, you know, all of this xenophobic, isolationist rhetoric that they've really been putting forth for a long time now, actually. And with all of that going on, yes, the voters who that appeals to, when they go into the voting booth, they understand that there are policies connected to those ideas.
Yep.
And no. So they are voting for somebody who's going to actually do a Muslim ban in terms of policy.
No, in fact, you know, you've hit on something that I've talked about, you know, privately with folks, going, you know, the mastery of Trump is that he's saying the things out loud that a lot of people whisper to each other, you know, in secret places.
Mm-hmm.
The Muslim ban, you know, going back to the good old days where blacks were in the fields and gays were in the closet and women were in the kitchens. You know, they whisper this stuff to each other, but they won't say it out loud. But Trump's saying it out loud. And I look at, you know, just the news that today, that the Trump administration's moving to exclude transgender people from civil rights protections.
Mm-hmm.
By saying that you're defined by what you were born into, which, you know, I think a lot of people agree with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may not say it out loud.
Yeah.
But a lot of, you know, I would argue the vast majority agree with. And I could be wrong, but most of the people who want to be on the right side still are going, I don't understand it. So we have to have some certainty in society.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that these are two sides of the issue, certainly, in the same way that those of us who feel like there should be equality are saying the complete opposite of that, right? And certainly they're going to espouse their views. I wouldn't necessarily say that they, you know, aren't saying it out in public anymore. I mean, I think these are people who are willing to go on national television if they have to.
No, look, I agree. No, I think there are a lot of people who are willing to say it, but I, you know, I think about people who I've known who are, you know, are Democrats, who are, you know, fairly decent liberals, if you will, who even they agree with some of this stuff. You know, you look at the caravan that's coming from, you know, that's coming through Mexico.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Democrats who are going, you know, we can't have open borders. I think one of the Democratic Party's problems is they don't know how to answer the immigration question, because a lot of Democrats don't want open borders. The idea of having, you know, mass waves of refugees coming into the U.S., a lot of people are afraid of that from a whole bunch of reasons. One, economically, can you absorb them? What's it going to do to the labor pool? What's it going to do to our system, you know, various systems of healthcare and infrastructure, and, you know, go down the line. I think a lot of people are they may not admit it out loud, but they're worried.
Yeah, for sure. But I think this is where our politics really sells us short, because these are things that really require a nuanced, determined conversation with multiple stakeholders, really presenting factual information about what's going on.
I agree. Not just somebody with a sledgehammer in a China shop. You don't want that?
No, I don't, actually. You know, but what happens is it gets reduced down to whatever you can put into a soundbite. And so what's easiest, right, is anger and fear and ignorance.
Yep, because I had a guy send me a picture today and go, you know, if they're coming here for freedom and, you know, because they, you know, they want to be Americans, why are they carrying their home country's flag? And I don't have an answer for it. And I wrote back, I go, I don't know that that's their flag. And I don't know that it was there originally. And I don't know. But hey, thanks for the picture.
Why are they flying the Confederate flag?
No, their home country's flag.
I understand that, but I'm saying, why are the people who are saying that flying Confederate flag?
There's an excellent question.
I mean, that technically is their, you know, home country. So again, you know, that I would say is sort of the hypocrisy of it. But, you know, my husband and I were actually having this conversation this weekend because, you know, we were talking about just this phenomenon of kind of falling out with people. You know, earlier in the conversation, I said that I don't really associate with any Trump people, thankfully. And we were just kind of talking about falling out with friends over the years, even when Obama was president, over just, you know, commentary about, you know, they're coming for our jobs and, you know, just this really hyperbolic, very racist conversations that people were, you know, trying to have with us. And we were just like, okay, I don't like where that person's going, and I'm not going to really go down that road anymore. But the reality of the situation is, and I say this in particular to Texans on this issue, because this state, and not just the state, the entire country would come to a complete screeching halt if it weren't for the immigrant labor that we have in this country. And that's something that we as Americans do not fess up to. We are not honest about the role that undocumented people and documented people who are immigrants play in our economy. Okay, I can go through and I can, you know, the people who cut my yard, the people who built my house.
No, you're right. And
I mean, let's
forget,
be honest.
Don't forget about your food.
The food, exactly. The food that I'm going to buy at the grocery store. I mean, let's keep it real here. And what are we saying? Are we saying that we want these people to do work for us, but we don't want to extend them just equal basic rights in our society? Are we saying that we don't value them as human beings who are providing a service the same way that we provide services in our jobs? And so just the hypocrisy and the inability to accept people in our society that have various jobs, but to judge people who are coming into this country and who are willing to do the jobs that we as Americans either don't want to do, are not skilled and trained enough to do, or are fortunate enough to have been educated in this country beyond the point of that being the best job we can get. And I think that's what's really disheartening about this, is that people aren't being honest about the role that these people play in this country and how really unfair we're being to them, and ungrateful, actually. But we don't have that conversation ever.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, at the end of it, we have to have that conversation. But, you know, the fear is that, you know, you see these large caravans coming, and I think that's what people have some fear over, that mm-hmm. we're seeing these waves of refugees coming in, and I think that's scaring people. And, you know, as I've said a number of times, you know, I go back to, you know, the Tea Party movement of, you know, all the people complaining about how much money we spend on foreign aid.
Mm-hmm.
We used to, you know, when places were having economic problems and there was, you know, instability, we used to go in and try and add some stability, because you didn't want these massive waves of refugees. Because, look, I think people want to stay home. I think people want to stay in their home countries. And you had to make that possible for them. And, you know, I would argue by, you know, doing all this mean-spirited budgeting stuff, that's been a big part of this driver.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, can you just imagine how bad the conditions would have to be in your home country, that knowing full well that for the last couple of months, this administration has literally been separating families, taking people's children away from them, putting them in cages. They may not ever see their children again. And knowing that, they're still coming over here. So can you imagine how dire the situation is? And again, when you have a government that is isolationist, that's racist, that vilifies other nations based on, you know, whatever the predominant religion is there, or whatever the ethnicity of the people is there. And so then you don't have allies. You don't have this ability to be diplomatic and to do some of these things from a foreign policy standpoint. To take care of this. I mean, they got Nikki Haley just resigned. I mean, where do we stand in the global community right now with Trump at the helm? we're extremely low down on the list. And so our ability to intervene in any of these nations, just even apart from the funding aspect, I think is very limited. And until, you know, we have a stable government here that can reach out and be a, you know, lead by example for these other nations, we're going to continue to see this because it's going to continue to get more out of control because we're not leading the free world anymore.
Yeah, it's gonna be ugly, and my fear is by not being the world's leader, by having, you know, someone who I look at Trump as someone who wants to be an isolationist.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm not an isolationist, I'm more of a protectionist. I define that by when I leave my house, I lock the door, but I don't have a giant moat around my house. I think you got to keep your house secure, but you know, you still want to deal with other people. So, I worry that we could end up, I look at these rallies that he's having and it's just bad movies from the past.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, again, the people who are very fearful, and naturally segregate themselves anyway, are already doing that in every little corner of America that they find themselves in, right? In the little, you know, slice of Alabama there in Pennsylvania as well. You know, people find pockets where they can be isolationists in their own vein, you know, but I think at the same time, when they see somebody like Trump kind of projecting those ideals onto foreign policy and how we deal with the rest of the world, then that becomes, I think, a national stance, and it becomes a problem for us. We really have to take that aspect of it seriously.
Yeah, I'm with you. Finally, the big rally tonight. Are we making predictions for the Senate race, or are we keeping that powder a little dry?
I'm keeping it dry. I want people to vote. I think we have an excellent chance. As long as people vote, we just have to get out there and actually vote. The voter turnout in Texas is almost last across the entire nation. We are not a red state. We are a non-voting state, and we have to change that aspect of it. So it's not over till the fat lady sings.
Yeah, I see. That was one of the things that I thought Trump was absolutely right about. And, in 2016, and one of the reasons that I said in April of 2016 he was going to win is that, you know, this country is a non-voting country. When the majority doesn't make the decisions, we have a problem. And Trump was right. I thought he brought people out who had never voted before. And, you know, I said this, you know, before. I mean, when my grandmother passed away in April of 2016, I went home for the funeral. I had been there throughout most of the time to be with her at the hospital. But for the funeral, my family is the basket of deplorables. And, because, look, these are people who all lost jobs in the steel mills and in the auto factories. Uh-huh. And, you know, all of these are working class, high school educated, white working class folks who at one point had it pretty good. And then all of those union jobs were just decimated by bad free trade deals.
Uh-huh.
And they were, they're all non-political. None of them vote. They complain like hell, but they never vote. When I went back in April, they were all registering to vote, and they were all voting for Trump. And I was like, wow. I can't imagine how many communities across the country this is going on in. And that was one of those things that, you know, just kind of grabbed me when I saw that. And the fear is that that continues. But I'm hoping on the other side, as you point out, that people will look at someone like O'Rourke and look at some of these other candidates and go, you know what, maybe I haven't voted in 20 years and maybe I've never participated. Now's going to be the time.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the hope anyway. But Jane, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Always great talking with you.
Absolutely. You too. Have a great week.
Good stuff. Our good friend Propane Jane. It's not what I had planned on talking about, but we just kind of veered in that direction. But good stuff anyway. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.